This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this edition, President Trump turned his first State of the Union address into what I would describe as an American pep rally last night, cheering the American people for helping one another overcome what was a year of natural and man-made tragedies. And then the president shifted, and he cast a vision of unity with faith, family, and freedom at its core. I'll give you my take on the president's speech in just a moment. And we'll also get the perspective of the former Baton Rouge police chief, Greg Ferries, on the decidedly different tone this administration has taken toward law enforcement officers. And then also in Kentucky, Governor Matt Bevin called upon the state citizens to pray in the aftermath of a deadly school shooting in the Bluegrass State last week, which calling for people to prayer, I mean, that's a natural, historical, and logical response to a tragedy such as this. But increasingly, there are those who deride and seek to dismiss those who call upon God as somehow out of touch. Well, Kentucky Governor Bevin will be here to tell us about his call on God for healing. And we'll also be taking your phone calls a little bit later here on Washington Watch. By the way, you may have heard this, the Republican conference heading out to West Virginia for a retreat to make their plans for the year. They were on a train. The train was involved in an accident, a dump truck. They collided. Everyone on the train was okay. I spoke shortly after the accident. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma called, and we discussed it. He said that there were a few people who were standing up or moving around during the time of the impact that were thrown down. He said there were some that had concussion-like symptoms on board. But no serious injuries on board. Unfortunately, we do have at least one fatality in those in the vehicle. So anyway, be praying for that. Dangerous world. Seems like everywhere we turn. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay. All right. I don't know if you were watching last night or listening to the president's speech. But President Trump delivered his first State of the Union address Tuesday night, before a joint session of Congress. Now, his speech, which lasted a little over an hour and 20 minutes, was one of the longest in the modern era. But I would also argue it was one of the best. The speech was, in my view, a sea change from the previous president in that it celebrated all things American. And I quote from him, quote, "We celebrate our police, our military, and our amazing veterans as heroes who deserve our total and unwavering support," end quote. But what made this speech one of the most remarkable addresses I've heard from the House chamber, and I've heard a number of them, is the way the president wove in powerful accounts of heroism, sacrifice, patriotism, compassion, and commitment. And two such accounts were the actions of Albuquerque Police Chief Ryan Hulitz and North Korean-born Ji Sung-ho. And I'm going to go into more detail with some clips of that in just a moment. But it was an amazing speech. And it began with recounting the natural and man-made tragedies that we've experienced as a nation over the last year. Here's a clip from the first few minutes of the president's speech.
"We have endured floods and fires and storms, but through it all, we have seen the beauty of America's soul and the steel in America's spine. Each test has forged new American heroes to remind us who we are and show us what we can be. We saw the volunteers of the Cajun Navy racing to the rescue with their fishing boats to save people in the aftermath of a totally devastating hurricane."
Now, That sounds like it could be just a throwaway line, the fact that, Americans helping Americans, the Cajun Navy. But let me tell you how significant that was. Yes, it was a shout-out to the Cajun Navy, and I've had folks in my church that have been a part of that. But let me tell you the difference. Back after Katrina, there were, and that was the devastating hurricane where the levee did not hold and water flooded into New Orleans and people drowned. It was a tragedy. Well, there were those, when the word spread, that grabbed their boats, their pickup trucks and their boats, and they headed to New Orleans to help. And guess what happened? They were turned away. Repeatedly, we've seen the volunteers. No. The government's got this. We don't need your help. Please go away. Get out of here. That's not the case now. Not only did the president affirm volunteerism in times of, but let me tell you the effect that that attitude has had on the federal government. In the Hurricane Harvey, it flooded Houston and that part of Texas. There were those, again, there was some from my church that headed over to Houston with their boats. Not only were they not turned away, but they were actually taken into the ranks of the Coast Guard and dispatched to go and rescue people. There was a recognition that the government could not do this alone. And we are so much more powerful when the government sees the American people as a partner in times of crisis. And quite frankly, that's the way it has been in our history, that in times of crisis, we pull together and there's room for everybody to help. And that was one of the powerful messages that was sent last night by the president. But there was more. And this is where the president underscores where our focus is. And I said a moment ago, these were his words about faith, family, and freedom. Here's the second clip of what the president had to say last night.
Together, we are rediscovering the American way. In America, we know that faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, are the center of American life. The motto is "In God We Trust."
That is historically the American way. Not what government can do, but we have, as he said, in America, we know that faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, are the center of the American life. Again, some may take it as a throwaway line, but it is a subtle affirmation and statement, bold statement, quite frankly, that we are discovering the American way. This goes back, and I mean, you could dissect this speech so many ways. There's so many layers in it. It was a phenomenally written speech. Let me just put it that way. I know that the president had teams of people working on it, and I've communicated to some of them because as one who speaks a lot and one who has read many of the greatest speeches in history, this was a speech that was very well done. And in saying this, that we are rediscovering the American way, that's what often is referred to as American exceptionalism. Well, what's at the heart of that? Well, in America, we know that bureaucracy are at the center of the American life. Our motto is "In God We Trust." Again, very powerful statement and affirmation. And then he goes on to talk about some of the important things that they're doing and have done. Here's a clip about the courts. Clip number three. Let's play that one.
Working with the Senate, we are appointing judges who will interpret the Constitution as written, including a great new Supreme Court justice and more circuit court judges than any new administration of our country. We are totally defending our Second Amendment and have taken historic actions to protect religious liberty.
By the way, he also set a record, I think, in the number of applauses that he received. I like how the Second Amendment and religious liberty were in the same sentence, because it is a fundamental right, and they are clearly connected. And it goes back to the courts, what the courts are doing, and the fact that he is seeking and putting in place judges who will respect the Constitution. Okay, I want to get to this account later in the speech, where he points out this was by far, well, there's really two, but this is one of the most impactful aspects, not only of this speech, but illustrations that I have seen in a speech, in a State of the Union speech. Let's listen here to clip number 5.
We see a vivid expression of this truth in the story of the Holetz family of New Mexico. Ryan Holetz is 27 years old, an officer with the Albuquerque Police Department. He's here tonight with his wife, Rebecca.
Thank you, Ryan.
Last year, Ryan was on duty when he saw a pregnant, homeless woman preparing to inject heroin. When Ryan told her she was going to harm her unborn child, she began to weep. She told him she didn't know where to turn, but badly wanted a safe home for her baby. In that moment, Ryan said he felt God speak to him. "You will do it because you can." He heard those words. He took out a picture of his wife and their four kids. Then he went home to tell his wife, Rebecca. In an instant, she agreed to adopt. The Holetz named their new daughter Hope. Ryan and Rebecca, you embody the goodness of our nation. Thank you.
That was one of the most powerful moments of the almost 90-minute speech. And I want you to consider for a moment what the president and his administration communicated with that illustration. Number one, they communicated the sanctity of human life, the value of each and every life, regardless of what zip code it's conceived in or what side of the tracks it might be born on. That was a powerful, powerful pro-life illustration promoting adoption. But there was another one. There's more. This was such a clear illustration of religious freedom. You see, Ryan is a police officer, and on the job, he was prompted by his faith in God to take a compassionate step that led to the adoption of little baby Hope. That's what we're arguing about, the ability to take your faith into the workplace, regardless of what your job might be, so that you might be a person that adds to, contributes to, and is a blessing to to society as a whole. Powerful. All right. Out of time in this segment, and I got to move on, but I'm going to revisit this later. Coming up next, Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky joins us to talk about why he called the state to pray in the wake of another school shooting. Don't go away. We're back with the governor after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you once again, those that might be interested, at the website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more information about our upcoming trip to Israel. We're going to be taking a group over April the 17th through the 27th, we'll have former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, General Jerry Boykin, former ambassador to the UN for human rights, Ken Blackwell, Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, going to be a part of that trip. So if you would like to join us, there's a few seats left, not many. Probably be gone by probably the end of this week, if not this week, next. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can find out more about how you can be a part of this exciting, exciting trip. Not only do we take in all of the historical, biblical sites, but we also take in kind of the geopolitical. We'll be hearing some of the political leaders from there in Israel, looking at both the security issues, the political issues. So it's a fascinating, fascinating trip, and you can be a part of it. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're waiting for Governor Bevin to give us a call. There was unfortunately, another school shooting in the state of Kentucky last week. A 15-year-old boy opened fire on his classmates at Marshall County High School there in Kentucky, killing two students, injuring several others. They ranged in age from 14 to 18 as they were waiting for the morning bell to ring. Now, 3 days after the deadly shooting, Governor Bevin offered hope to the grieving community and called on churches in the state to hold a day of prayer to remember and honor the victims and help the community heal. Now, that doesn't sound unreasonable. In fact, that has been the course of action that many political leaders have taken over the years. In fact, that's what most people anticipate and expect. In fact, that's where a lot of people turn in the wake of tragedies, whether they be man-made or natural disasters. People turn to God. But there's something that's happened in the last 5 to 6 years, maybe the last decade, to where there is this not just cynicism and indifference to prayer. I mean, you don't have to pray. If you don't want to pray, don't pray. But there has been this reaction of hostility to these public calls for prayer. In fact, immediately when Governor Bevin called on the state to pray, there were the mockers who began to mock and to deride the governor and this idea that we should turn to God. What is behind that is an effort to, again, drive religion, faith from the public square. And I'm thankful. I know Governor Bevin, good Christian man, solid business guy who actually, you know, just kind of got into politics. He's not been in it for long. Just ran for governor. Actually ran for the U.S. Senate a few years ago unsuccessfully, then turned around and ran for governor and won. But this is an effort to try to discourage political figures from turning to prayer, for calling for days of prayer. Watch it. Anytime there's something like this and people tweet out praying for, you know, such and such or praying for the nation, you get all the haters that respond back, keep your prayers, don't want your prayers. Why would God let this happen? And I think it's very important that we not, I'm not interested in engaging in a, you know, back and forth with those people during those times. But I am very interested in encouraging Christians not to back down, especially leaders, political leaders, because it's, look, the political path is generally the path of least resistance, where you find no opposition. And you can, you know, I mean, they avoid it. They avoid the controversy. And so I think it's very, very important that we encourage and stand with those who are willing to publicly stand up and say, you know what, we need to pray. Well, and here he is now. Governor Bevin joins us by phone. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's great to speak with you this evening.
Now, Governor, I was just telling the story about what happened last week in Kentucky and then your call to the citizens of Kentucky to pray, calling upon churches to pray. Then, of course, the backlash, the mockers that came out. But let me ask you, how important is it, do you see prayer in healing the people that have gone through such a tragedy as this?
I've seen firsthand evidence just in Marshall County, just in the last week and change, for exactly how important it is. These people volitionally, not because they were instructed to, not because anyone came from the outside and suggested it, but organically and volitionally from within that community. They had prayer vigils, prayer meetings, gatherings of people, students and adults alike, independent of the school, at the school, in places of worship, outside places of worship. It was remarkable. And again, the reason being is not because this provides a false solace, but because it is a direct and immediate connection to the very creator that endowed us with the inalienable rights that so often we have taken for granted in this country, that our founders understood was important. And I just found it encouraging, frankly, as a person of faith myself, to see this community binding together through this in a terrifically terrible time, and yet they were coming together and comforted by their faith. And again, look out the history of our country. I mean,
right
from the very beginning, this has been something recognized by our political leaders as something of importance.
Governor, we're up against a break. Can you hold on for 2 minutes during the break so we can finish this conversation on the other side of the break?
Absolutely.
Okay. Folks, don't go away. Governor Matt Bevin is going to hold on. I hope you'll hold on as well so you can hear the conclusion of our conversation with the governor of Kentucky. calling upon the citizens of that state to pray in the wake of yet another tragedy. And he didn't back down when he was criticized. We're going to talk about that. So don't go away. We're back on the other side of the break with more.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home this afternoon, you can check it out later. It's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, going to bring the governor back in, Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky. Governor, thanks for holding on there for us. Governor, I know you're a man of faith. We've spoken. You've been one of our featured speakers at the Values Voters Summit. And, you know, there, when you've had to walk through these things as a public figure, helping others deal with tragedies, as you say, this is not just some kind of empty practice, but it is real. It's tangible. You can feel it. You can see it in the wake of tragedies like this. The mocking that comes with this, in my view, that's designed to drive us away from the very thing that can help us, and all the more reason why we should not lose sight of what it is that can truly help us as a nation and as a community.
It's interesting, too, because so often people mock because they think this is sort of a public knee-jerk response when people don't know what else to do or if they're trying to put up a false front of hope or what have you. But the reason I am so convinced of the power of this is severalfold. Personally, just in my own life, I've experienced and seen the significant power of prayer. And not everybody shares my faith, and I appreciate that. And I understand that for some, they literally have no idea of what I'm speaking, and that's fair enough. But I also, in this specific instance of those in Marshall County, it wasn't just the public calls and the public vigils and the public prayer that was accomplished. I've spent hours with the parents of the two children who lost their lives and with some of the parents of those that were injured. And these are people who also privately, with broken hearts, have called out to God, both while I'm there, but from my understanding and in conversation with them, long before I sat down with them and probably even in many times after that fact. The point being is that people do this individually and they do it collectively, not to give themselves false promise. I will tell you from personal experience, having lost our oldest daughter in a tragic car accident. It is at a time like that that if it were not real, you would know it. You would not pretend as a parent who has lost a child that the solace and the comfort that comes from prayer with one's creator was fake. If you think it's fake, you're not going to pretend at a time like that that it isn't. And I will tell you, I've seen the same thing with these parents. And if people look at the history of this nation, look at the history of Western civilization, look at the history of the world, there has been time and time again. I'm reading an interesting book right now to my boys at night. Each night we read a different chapter. It's called Miracles in American History, 32 Amazing Stories of Answered Prayer. And it was ironic. I was about two-thirds of the way through this book by a woman named Susie Federer, and about two-thirds of the way through this book when this tragedy happened. And it's just, it struck me at how often America has been sustained by this communication with God.
Well, as you pointed out, with our Creator. And what, I mean, it's just, you are absolutely correct. The history of this country is filled with our public officials, our political leaders calling upon the people to pray in times of challenge, of tragedy, of loss. How have the churches been responding?
They have responded well. I mean, not only those in the immediate community, but I know from feedback that I've received that churches across the state, I called the entire state, not just that immediate area, but I called upon every house of worship that believes in the power of prayer, that knows it to be true, to just call out for comfort for this community and for these families. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's been extraordinary. It really has, that despite the loss and the pain, that this community is healing already in powerful ways. You made a moment ago, you made comment about the mockery and the ridicule, and that's true. That's what people do. People who are not of faith, people who want to belittle it. But as people who are believers know, I mean, be not deceived. God is not mocked. And at the end of the day, while people may feel a sense of pride or whatever it is that they would derive from being cynical and jaded and dismissive and ridiculing others, at the end of the day, the truth is the truth. We live in a day and age where there's so much effort to make everything relative that it's all subjective and that one person's opinion is as good as the next. But the truth is the truth. And at the end of the day, the truth wins. And this is something I've communicated to people, not wearing it on my sleeve, but I would encourage all people in positions of influence, whether they're in political office, whether they're coaches, whether they're teachers, whether they're parents in the home, be bold and unapologetic about the things that you know to be truth. We have no reason to apologize. We don't need to be ashamed. To be workmen who need not be ashamed is a verse, but it's more than just simply a verse in the Bible. It's a call to action. And I would encourage everyone listening to be bold. Do not allow mockery and ridicule to move you from what you know to be true.
Well, Governor, thank you for issuing that challenge, but more importantly, thank you for being an example of that in the state of Kentucky. Governor, great to talk with you again. Thanks so much for being on the program, and you and the state of Kentucky are in our prayers.
Thank you.
Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky, a lot of good things. I mean, he's actually put through a lot of very good public policy that are reflective of those values. Okay, when we come back, a decidedly different tone toward law enforcement last night in the President's State of the Union address. We're going to be joined by the former police chief of Baton Rouge, Greg Ferries, to get the take on law enforcement. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, during his first State of the Union address, President Trump took a decidedly different tone toward police officers than we saw in the previous administration. One of the things he said is that in the first portion of his speech, quote, "And we celebrate our police, our military, and our amazing veterans as heroes who deserve our total and unwavering support." Now, throughout the speech, he made recognition of Border Patrol agents, ICE agents, others working in law enforcement. Of course, the story we talked about just a few moments ago, Ryan Holetz, very significant. And I was talking about the religious liberty, the sanctity of life aspect with Ryan Holetz, but also as a police officer. From Albuquerque, given the really the anti-law enforcement tone that has come from this city, Washington, D.C., in the last several years, actually holding up a law enforcement officer as an example of compassion and commitment and a faith sends a whole different message to the American public. But I want to see, Was that message received by law enforcement folks across the country? And joining me now, a good friend of mine, Greg Ferries, former Baton Rouge police chief and former investigator for the state inspector general's office and sheriff of East Baton Rouge Parish. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good afternoon.
So what was your take on the president's speech last night as it pertained to law enforcement? Is that a different message we're hearing from this administration than from the previous?
An extremely different perspective on that, Tony, and one that we certainly welcome in law enforcement. The Obama, Holder, Lynch years were difficult. The Clinton, Reno years were difficult. You always felt like that the presumption was against you, that the police had done something wrong, and that you sort of had to prove yourself right. And as you well know, That goes against everything in our Constitution. You don't have to prove yourself right in any criminal context, but sort of the feeling you were being closely watched and by people who weren't friendly to you was Mr. Trump and Mr. Sessions, a whole new and very welcome atmosphere.
Is that spreading across the ranks of law enforcement? Are they beginning to see that from a practical standpoint of the policies of the Department of Justice and not just the rhetoric but the actual policies? Is that changing?
For those of us who've been in this business for a long time, I think we feel like that when we do what we have to do, we will be fairly judged. That's not to say that all police officers are right all the time. They are not, but they are right most of the time. And I think the presumption has to go that they acted appropriately unless proved otherwise. That's simply not been the case in the atmosphere for the last 8 years prior to the election of President Trump.
Well, Chief, I mean, for most part, I mean, the vast majority, and you and I have talked about this before, the vast majority of the men and women who volunteer to take on a position that would put them in harm's way for the benefit of the community, the vast majority of them do so out of the proper motives. Now, that's not to say that you don't have a bad apple in there. You do. You've seen them. You've dealt with them. I've seen them. But the vast majority of men and women who serve in law enforcement do so out of a desire to protect and serve, not lord over and rule over people.
We have both seen in our lives, in our police careers, thousands of these people who have chosen law enforcement as a profession, and the vast, vast majority of them do it for the right reasons. And not only that, Tony, as you know, most agencies use pretty sophisticated screening mechanisms, and those who are going into it for the wrong motives, that's going to come out on a screening process in the hiring process, and they're not going to get a job. So we're getting better and better at that, and as you say, the vast majority are in it for the right reasons, and I think the presumption has to go that way, and it has not gone that way for eight years.
But I think it is. I think it is changing, as you said. I think the president, this administration. I know Jeff Sessions. In fact, I've had the conversation with him about this just a few weeks ago. That the presumption is that the men and women who are in uniform are there to serve and are doing the right thing, and the federal government needs to have their back. Now, that's not to say that if something is not done inappropriately, they don't deal with it. They will. But I think, you know, no longer, you know, in uniform on the street, but I would have to think that the president's remarks last night is a real morale boost to law enforcement across this country.
Well, they certainly lifted my morale, and I'm sure I'm in the vast majority for two reasons, both the tone he took and the tone that Mr. Sessions is taking, General Sessions is taking, and the fact that he thought it important enough to mention that in the State of the Union, his most widely watched speech of the year in all likelihood.
All right, Greg Ferries, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for dropping by today.
My pleasure, Tony.
All right, former Baton Rouge Police Chief Greg Ferries. You know, I think it's important to get the perspective of the men and women who are out there on the street. He's still actually involved in law enforcement. He's a chief criminal deputy for one of the parishes there in Louisiana, and it's a tough job. And I still have a lot of friends in law enforcement because I still am involved with them because I love it. I think law enforcement's a great profession. But I've talked to a number in the last year, couple of years, who have decided to get out. Some retired, some just left, and a lot of agencies are having difficulty hiring people just because of the animosity that has been fomented in the public by the previous administration, the president in particular, and that's been harmful because you know most people don't want to go into a profession where people hate you to begin with. They want to at least give you the benefit of the doubt, but different day with this administration. All right, I'm going to do this real quick. I want to get to some phone calls before we run out of time. We don't have a lot of time, but 866-372-7234. What do you think of the president's speech? Liked it, didn't like it, indifferent, it doesn't matter. Just want to know what you think. We're going to be very quick. It's going to be a lightning round. So give me a quick take on the president's speech if you listened to it or watched it, okay? 866-372-7234. I don't want to know what your neighbor thought. I want to know what you think. So 866-372-7234, the number to weigh in real quick as we take our last few minutes together to get a sense of what you thought of the president's speech. Now, you obviously know what I think, and, you know, I'm not trying to bias you in any way. I think it was a great speech, one of the best I've heard. And I got some clips ahead of time, but then they sent the full text out right at the beginning of the speech. So I kind of read ahead and read through it. And it was really something that his delivery was actually made the speech really good. But it was the people that he drew in. The guests that he had there. All right, let's go. We're going to go straight to Kansas, where Mary's on the line. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just really believe that the president was awesome last night, and I am glad that I lived long enough to hear a president that would sound like a president, and not after the last 8 years where we were just chopped down all the time. And I want to thank him and all his people that are supporting him. And I didn't feel like a Christian last night because I had to call the prayer line and say, give me prayer, because all I'm asking is for all the Democrats to have nightmares till they pass these laws where these poor babies are not dismembered.
All right, Mary. Thank you, Mary. I appreciate you calling. That's a whole nother topic. I didn't even mention the Democrats in their response. I don't have time to get into that, but it was very telling. Lynn in Kansas City. Welcome, Lynn. Yeah, go right ahead.
Hi. I wanted to say that I really loved the State of the Union. It was the best State of the Union address I've heard in probably 20 years. And the only suggestion I have is that it ran long, and it wouldn't have run quite as long if they wouldn't have stood up and applauded at every single thing, if they could hold their applause to the end. That's all.
I'm sure the president would disagree with you on that, because I think he enjoyed the applause. Lynn, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. Let's go to Oklahoma and David. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention, and maybe he mentioned in his address last night, I do not know for sure, but I'm glad that he does remind people that the foundations of the United States are God-centered. But, and I've heard him mention in recent past, he did mention that he has mentioned awareness of the other religions and that we should be open to all. Because I think it's just a thing that makes Christians look even better, so to speak, in that we are open-minded, if you will, and recognize other religions. But thank you very much.
All right, David, thanks for calling in. I mean, he spoke in the context of religious freedom. He never singled out a particular religion. I think he did in the case, and I didn't play his clips, of the North Korean-born Ji Sung Ho, but I think in the speech he made reference to he went to China, and when he came back, he was tortured in let me see if I can find it so I don't misread it. Let's see. Yeah, he returned from a brief visit to China. His tormentors wanted to know, and I'm quoting from the speech, his tormentors wanted to know if he had met any Christians. That's the only time I think of the speech the president said Christians. But he goes on to say, quote, he had, and he resolved to be free. And he goes on in the speech, that faith really drove him, today, again, quoting from the speech, today he lives in Seoul, where he rescues other defectors and broadcasts into North Korea what the regime fears the most, the truth. Well, what is the truth? There's a lot of things wrapped into the truth. So anyway, thanks, David, for the call. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I enjoyed the speech. I thought the guest lineup was the best I've seen in 42 years. Great guests, and then now they weed them in and out of the speech. I thought was awesome. I think the point I'd like to make, I think the Republicans got a real, real opportunity to expand their base to get more of the Black and Hispanic vote, and I hope they jump on the opportunity, because when he announced that the lowest unemployment rate for Blacks ever recorded, not a single Democrat clapped. Same thing, announced the lowest unemployment rate ever for Hispanics, not a single Democrat applauded. And I think that is very telling. The Democrats will say they're for the minorities and the working class, but just remember, not a single Democrat supported any of the tax cuts. And not a single Democrat applauded when he announced the lowest on record unemployment rates. I think we've got a real, the conservative base, I think, has a golden opportunity to expand and get a bigger percentage of the Black and Hispanic vote, which, helped bring in the victory in the last election.
Great points, Joe. Absolutely spot on. Let's go. I'm going to work another call. Let's go to Texas, where Jordana is on the line. Jordana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, I just wanted to call and just report. I did watch last night, and I am of the younger generation, which most of us are in or out into the politics, and I could feel God's presence just through the television, even that he allowed to be spread and spoke to so many people through television, and it was just so powerful. I was in tears. And I love that he's relatable and that it is easy to listen to, unlike other presidents.
Great point. Thanks so much for listening, Jordana, and calling in today. And always glad to have the younger generation not only listening but engaged. That's great. All right, very quickly, 30 seconds, going to Landon in Georgia. Landon, go right ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Tony. I just want to say that I am more and more impressed with President Trump every day. I'm a young voter. It's the first State of the Union I've ever watched. But each day that he declared that he's going to do something new for our country, I'm more and more impressed.
All right, Landon. Thank you for listening, calling in, and again, thank you for being engaged and involved in the process. And we need more. Look, this is an issue of Christian responsibility, Christian citizenship, to be informed and engaged. And at all ages, as followers of Christ, we need to be living a life of salt, light and salt. And that means we're involved, we're engaged. All right, out of time. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls. Great comments. And we're going to return to that, going to talk more about the speech later this week. Until next time. I leave you, yes I do, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, read it, where he says, "And you, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prepared, when you've prayed, and you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.